When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Please note there is a brief discussion around sexual assault in today's episode. Please listen with care. Criminality, the podcast that we, Rebecca and Melissa, I'm Rebecca, started because we just loved true crime and reality TV so much. We thought surely these two things go together, and boy, do they. But I introduced us by name because it's been a minute, or at least it feels like it has. Melissa, so happy to be recording with you. How are you?
I know. I'm good. How are you doing?
A little manic, I guess.
I know.
As revealed through that intro, but I think it's fine.
Yeah. Rebecca, we had a week where we re-released an old episode,
yes.
A classic, if you will. Nick Lachey. Is that a classic? It was last year. It was Nick Lachey.
I think
obviously
for our tenure, it can be considered
a
classic.
True. But that kind of happened because of another situation that happened, right?
Yeah.
Rebecca wasn't able to record. She was out of town. So we finally were going to do a crossover with Amy with Little Miss Recap.
Yes. We love her. We
Very
love the
exciting.
Show.
Absolutely. And it was going to be a recap of the Sister Wives episode where the Browns leave Las Vegas, or where they leave Utah,
yeah.
and they break down 75 times. Well, between the time that recorded and we were going to release, I'm sure you guys know that Janelle's son, Garrison, had died by suicide. And so we just felt like it wasn't a great time to release the episode. So that's why you got to repeat. And we're just putting it on the back burner. Maybe we'll release it at another time. But I mean, it's an old episode. So we could. We very much could.
Right.
It's an old recap. So, but just out of respect to the family.
Yeah, of course. That was awful news.
That was absolutely terrible.
Yeah. There's no other way to put that. Mm-mm. It's devastating. And obviously we are still thinking of them and just,
yeah.
I don't know. I hope they can lean on each other to get through it. It's awful.
I know.
But I did get to listen to that episode when we thought we were going to release it, and it was so much fun. So we will have to do another recap or have Amy on for a different conversation because she's so great and you two together were
she
so
is.
Much fun to listen to. So we'll have to figure out another way to do that soon.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, yeah. So because of that break and the replay and not releasing that one, it feels like it's been many weeks. And in fact, because that was unplanned, we didn't do clues for today's story.
Oh, yeah.
So listeners and you, Melissa, have no idea where this is about to go. It's my turn to tell a story. And the weirder thing that I just realized is it piggybacks, I don't know if you want to say nicely, but it piggybacks on the replay of Nick Lachey. That's what if that were a clue? What would you guess my show might be about? Just an episode.
Yeah, I would guess it would be about Matthew from Love is Blind and maybe some bodies he has in a basement. I don't know.
We don't do murders, Melissa, remember?
True, true.
Except every now and then when I decide it's okay.
Except when we change the rules for ourselves.
Yes. Well, when that becomes breaking news, you will hear that episode here, but you're close. We are going to talk Love is Blind because
Ooh.
It's just the world I've been in for the last, you know, for season six.
Yep.
And I know it didn't grab you the way it has in past seasons or the way it grabbed me. So I apologize in advance, but you're coming on this trip with me.
I'm glad to. It's over now,
okay.
So I'm, you know, I'm ready to be heard again.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Brace yourself. Well, unfortunately, I hate to do this, but for the story's purpose, we do have to go back to a moment in time, a moment that was 2020. I'm sorry.
Oof.
We won't be there long. But in addition to everything that we know 2020 was, it was also an interesting year for television. I mean, there's some shows that are just inextricably linked to the pandemic. Like, what is yours?
Tiger King.
Tiger King is mine too. Mm-hmm. And Cheer. That's exactly right. Both amazing Netflix series, by the way. Yeah. Tiger King. I have such a visceral memory watching it while New York City was just in this suspended state of panic. Like, no idea what was going on. And there was so much weird comfort in watching this crazy world that was so different from mine and so much worse as far as I knew at that moment. I don't know. It was such a bizarre, twisted escape.
It was something where I think also because we didn't have anything else, you know, in general, everyone's at home. And so then people are live tweeting it. Like, there's so, everybody was a part of the conversation, right?
Yes. It wasn't like the water cooler, like the whole country was the water cooler. Mm-hmm. And we were all having the same Monday morning conversation. Yes. The consumption was insane. But in addition to those amazing series we just mentioned, Tiger King and Cheer, there were a lot of unscripted reality shows that also premiered in 2020. And according to Forbes, two of the 10 most watched were reality dating shows, Love is Blind and The Circle.
I was going to ask about The Circle. I wouldn't consider that a dating show.
I didn't like The Circle or whatever it was. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even think I got through an episode.
I watched the first season and our friend Stacy, she really loved it. And so it was kind of like a fun thing to talk to her about, but we would just talk to each other in emojis because that's like how they would do it. It was so ridiculous.
I do remember that.
It was a little bit of lightning in a bottle. Like, I could only watch that one season. They did more. I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is bad enough. But there were people I was cheering for. So that was it.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't pay much attention to The Circle, but Love is Blind, I mean, that show put me in a chokehold from season one and it has really not let up since. Like, but I don't even feel ashamed of it anymore. I'm not alone. I read today that Netflix reported 30 million households watched the series within the first 4 weeks after the premiere. And Love is Blind season one stayed in the top 10 in the United States for 47 days straight after its release, which apparently is really high. And usually it's kids' shows that do that because kids like watch the same show over and over and over.
Do I know?
Tell us about it. So I've just been so into season six, which just concluded, as many people probably know. So before we get into today's story, which is going to be about Love is Blind, the franchise, I want to set the scene for anyone who maybe has yet to watch. It still surprises me. I'll just get a text like my friend Shiloh, who, you know, kind of by osmosis, just texted me and was like, I guess I'm into Love is Blind now because a coworker's been talking about it and I got curious. And so now she's in. So
love it.
I'm always just like, wow, how could someone not like have known in the last 4 years? So welcome to the new watchers. You know, you're welcome here. But there will be some spoilers. Okay. So now for the premise. Here's the official blurb. Love is Blind is a reality television series on Netflix. The show follows a social experiment. They love calling it an experiment, right? We're, like as if some science
I was already rolling my eyes.
Where single men and women look for love and get engaged all before meeting in person. The most, I guess, akin we could compare it to would be Married at First Sight, I guess, which is kind of your expertise.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so
for anyone
too.
Who hasn't seen it, I think that's like the closest we could get. So picture this. 15 men, 15 women, all from the same city. So that's kind of a unique factor of the show. Yes, they go into a different city each season, and you actually are meeting people from your own city, singles. They're on a quest to find love. They enter these pods, which are, you know what? Sorry. Speaking of pod, I kind of wonder if that was some of the weird magic or zeitgeist that it hit during COVID, because pod was like your safe group of people, right?
Right.
Like, and then they were in pods. Now, I know they filmed it previously and it released in 2020, so it wasn't like it was a pandemic show, but I wonder if just that idea of the pod was like resonating on a weird deeper level. Anyway, that just
We just didn't have a lot of TV and people love mess.
Okay, fair enough. We won't overthink this. So the singles chat to one another through the wall, but they can't see each other. They kind of go through these speed dating rounds, and then they can choose longer dates and even propose if they feel strongly about one person. This is all happening in about 10 to 12 days. That's kind of the goal, is to propose to someone and for them to say yes. But they don't meet face-to-face until the proposal is accepted. They have a big, long runway walk where, you know, the doors come up, they see each other, they walk to each other.
Or a like T-Rex run.
Dino
like,
run. Right. I know. And she even knew. And I don't think I thought that. But then once she said it, it's all you could see when I play it back.
I also saw her and like running towards a friend. Like I saw like a super That's cut how she of those runs. Two. And I was like, oh, poor thing.
It's like Phoebe on Friends, the way she jogged.
I don't talk about Friends, but good for you. I know what you're talking about.
People will know.
Move on.
Then for the couples that get engaged, it's off to a romantic couples retreat, which is kind of like a honeymoon, except before the wedding. There they get to know each other better, potentially in every sense of the word, mm-hmm. if you get what I mean. And then they also meet the other singles or couples from the show, which also means they're meeting the people they were just dating days ago in the pod. So obviously drama ensues.
Remind me, did they do that from the first season that they all yes. met? Okay. You know what? I'm confusing it with Married at First Sight because they used to send them to like different cities and they would never have any relationships with each other. And yeah, then after a while, they started putting them together. Okay.
They always come back right out of the gate, like Smart. Out of the proposal engagement. Then the couples move in together into apartments in the city where they all live and have their own places, but they move into like one building, all the couples. Yeah. And for 3 weeks, they meet each other's families, plan their weddings, and ultimately, hopefully, end up at the altar to find out if both will say, I do, or I don't, or if one will say, I do, and one says, I don't. Mm-hmm. And that's the big climax of the show. But perhaps, maybe, you want to hear straight from the host's mouth how they might describe Love is Blind.
Yeah, I think we all want to be loved for who we truly are. And I'll tell you, the gentlemen who are here for the exact same reason. You know, and this experiment is now a proven approach to finding love.
So over the next 10 days, you guys are going to finally have the chance to fall in love based solely on who you are on the inside. Not because of your looks, your race, your background, or your income.
And guys, there will be no devices, zero distractions.
The only time you guys are going to interact are in the private pods. You're going to be separated by one thin wall. You won't ever get to see each other.
Okay. Yes, Vanessa, we know they won't get to see each other. They've said it 30,000 times. We got it.
I know. This is them at their most like restrained and composed.
Yeah,
I agree. It was early days. Mm-hmm. Things went downhill from there. So the show has mixed reviews, but most can agree it's addictive. Rotten Tomatoes says, quote, addictive but problematic. Love is Blind is undoubtedly an intoxicating binge, but its version of romance often comes off more toxic than aspirational.
Yeah.
This is why we love it.
I mean, so, no notes.
Exactly. So let's talk about all things Love is Blind, the good, the bad, and the litigations after a quick break from this week's sponsor.
Spring is bursting with fresh energy. The air, our aspirations, and even our homes get a refreshing makeover. And what better time to revamp your home security with SimpliSafe? It's our top choice, and for good reason. Praised as the best home security system for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report, and recognized by Newsweek for its exceptional customer service, SimpliSafe has you covered. From break-ins to fires and floods, its comprehensive sensors keep your entire home safeguarded. I also love that with the cameras I have in my house, I can be gone, not be able to get a hold of a kid, and simply go onto one of the cameras and look around the room and see my kid is there and safe, but just ignoring me, as, you know, kids will do sometimes. And with a range of indoor and outdoor cameras, you can keep a vigilant eye on your property around the clock. For less than $1 a day, you can enjoy 24/7 professional monitoring, ensuring prompt emergency responses for whenever you need it. Plus, SimpliSafe's monitoring agents can intervene in real time, deterring intruders with the power of voice through wireless indoor cameras. But the best part is there's no long-term commitment, and you have a generous 60-day money-back guarantee. So why not give SimpliSafe a try? If it doesn't exceed your expectations, simply return it for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given us and our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/criminality. That's simplisafe.com/criminality. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
First, the good. So far, 10 couples have said I do on the show, and 8 are still together today. But keep in mind, there were about 30 people per season in total, and there have been 6 seasons. So the numbers don't seem quite as strong when you look at it that way, but I'm not great at math, so who knows? Maybe statistically, the odds are still good. I don't know. Of these couples, there are a few standouts, but chief among them is Lauren and Cameron from season one. Yes. Surely you remember them?
Mm-hmm.
This couple was so great. They made Love is Blind look like a good idea. They were mature, funny, smart, attractive, successful, confident, kind. I really had fun writing about them.
Yeah.
And they fell in love, got married, and are still together. It'll be 6 years this November, which is pretty real.
Mm-hmm.
But as the seasons have progressed, many have said that the show's quote-unquote experiment has become less pure and the behavior among the contestants a little more toxic. The dominating sentiment on the internet is that Love is Blind had to exist just for Cameron and Lauren to find each other.
Agree.
And get married. And I say, if they do nothing else in the future, if they cancel tomorrow, Lauren and Cameron are together and we should all just be, that's enough for us.
Absolutely. We can go from there.
Uh-huh. 100%. No pressure on them. I mean, I want them to be happy. I really do wish them a long and happy
life. I do think, yeah, we do all, like, everyone says that. So there probably is, like, we can't.
I know, these poor
people. We can't fight.
Like, yeah, at least not in public. Yes. You know what their sessions and counseling are like. Another standout couple was from season four, Tiffany and Brett. Just another top-notch couple that are just leaps and bounds above their castmates in terms of maturity and actually seeming to be ready to be married. And every season needs one couple like that. We want all the drama in the other ones, but we want to root for one actual couple you could meet in real life and mm-hmm. say, we give you our blessing.
Yeah.
Tiffany and Brett.
We're good with this. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they are also in it for the long haul. Another good thing on the good list, babies. Two married couples are now expecting. Zach and Bliss, who had one of the more memorable, unconventional paths to the altar. He rejected her, proposed to Irina. Irina and Zach met and literally started hating one another. So they broke up and he met up with Bliss, who amazingly gave him another chance. And they got married and they seemed like one of the happier,
oh my goodness,
real couples.
I got chills when you said that. So, like, apparently I'm very into this. My eyes are tearing up.
I root for them.
But I think I really did
you really are.
I told you. His story about his mom and his family, like, got to me. So for him finding this person who really loves him and having a family, I don't know. It just made me happy.
This feels like Freaky Friday. You are me. I am you.
I don't think you've ever cried in one of these.
I don't think so either, but I've sure been closer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This Moving is on. Wild. Wow. I just need a minute. Okay. Whew. But I do root for Bliss and Zach. I really do. Another couple, Brandon and Alexa, are expecting, who got married on season three. So that is more of the good.
Mm-hmm.
Now for the bad. And I had to trim this down. I mean, the bad is endless, but
yeah.
For every standout, amazing couple, there were several standout, cringy, sometimes toxic people. Let's look at some highlights.
Yay.
I mean, I'm happy, so.
Yeah. So how are you feeling about Amber? Is she everything you expected?
She's actually, it's more than I expected, so, which is good. She definitely gets me out of my comfort zone, like.
You never struck me as the person that would go for Amber. And it's weird to see it all come together. I'm like,
you told me that a couple times.
Do you feel like you guys are emotionally connected? Like, I know y'all are obviously, like, physically, and, like, what I don't want is, like, for you to feel some sort of, like, physical, sexual thing that, like, and then you're married and, like, 2 weeks down the road, you're like, I don't have things in common with this person on an intellectual level. Like, I want to make sure that y'all are there. The bond we made.
I know.
Literally.
We had a friendship.
If anything ever comes up, you reach out to me.
Yeah.
After your dude. You and your dude, and I know you. I know you, baby. I know you. And I saw you and your baby. And I saw you guys were so perfect. I'm in love with my fiance. I am in love with him. And I know you and him have a very serious friendship. Honest to God. He is the most amazing person I've ever met my whole life. The Barnett thing that happened in the pods, it's over.
It was a complicated situation to begin with, and getting over that might take a while,
sweetie.
But if it was still a thing, if it was still in your head, that would have been disrespectful, and that would have made me literally like beat your
baby for sure.
I'm not gonna lie.
Look at me.
Baby's a fan. Okay. Baby, I'm never gonna be with you. I've never had them.
Promise me.
Never, not ever.
I may have blocked some of this out.
I must have as well, because I was sure this was never before seen footage. But no, it's just in the regular episode.
Is it weird to think that maybe things have gotten less toxic as the seasons have gone on? Because I don't remember feeling this way in this season.
That was like uncomfortable to watch.
Very, 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 very.
Yeah.
And also, yeah. Did you know Jessica's 34 and her fiance's 24?
Wait, what? So, equal opportunity in terms of toxicity, men and women.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
If you haven't watched the show Love is Blind, we call it that because they're in these pods. Obviously, you're supposed to go on the show in agreement with the show's principle that you don't find out what the person on the other side looks like until you meet them. The idea is, is love blind? Can you fall in love with someone without seeing what they look like, which kind of means without knowing if you're physically attracted to them?
Right.
And so people, often men on the show, get very creative in finding out ways to ask what they look like or what they're wearing or all kinds of questions to get a little grasp on what they might be working with, so to speak. So if you play the next clip, this is Shake from season 2, who was horrible from start to finish. It's a quick, quick clip.
We were to be at a music festival. Do you like being on a guy's shoulders?
Yeah, you're up for the challenge, you can pick me up.
Yeah, but will I have trouble picking you up?
I forgot how bad that is, but do you know what it reminds me of? Remember when on The Office, when Michael is being set up with different people and he asks Phyllis, like, can she fit in a canoe?
Yes!
That's exactly what it
yes!
is.
Yes! That's exactly what it is. That is so, it's the millennial version of that. Like, if we're at Coachella, can I give you a piggyback ride? I mean, what a douche.
Totally.
Deep D, I loved Deep D, deserves so much better. And she had one of the best altar moments where she said no. And she said, I choose myself, and walked out. And her family was like, bye, Shake. Like, oh, so good. So for our next baddie, we have Uche, who was part of a love triangle with Lydia and Aaliyah. This was just last season on season 5. So on this season, one of the women soon realizes she's dated one of the guys in the pods in real life, struggles with how to tell a castmate who'd become a friend who was falling for him. So that's like a new conflict that the show had never encountered before. Mm-hmm. This was the Uche Lydia Aaliyah love triangle, like I mentioned. Now, this was bad and uncomfortable and left the audience with a lot of unanswered questions. Like, I don't feel like we ever got to the bottom of some of that. But even before that happened, Uche's red flags were waving. Mm-hmm. Take this moment from the pods when Aaliyah was being really vulnerable and sharing about past mistakes she had made in a relationship and how he responds.
And I'm not saying, like, I've never lied and hurt somebody. You know, I mean, in my past, I've done things, and sometimes it was selfish, but...
You've done things. Have you ever cheated in a relationship?
Once.
You can be honest. Tell me about it.
It was in the relationship where I was just not sexually satisfied for 2.5 years.
When was this?
2 years ago.
Oh, boy. You're a recent cheater.
Not like that, Uche. Don't say that.
Oh.
Don't say it like that, because...
It's the truth, isn't it?
I mean, it...
I don't miss that guy at all. At all.
No, and he had me fooled. I'm not going to lie. I was an Uche fan. The very, like... And this was... That was the first episode, by the way. That all happened. So it was, like, the first 10 minutes of episode 1. I was like, yes, I'm into this guy. That happened episode 1.
And you still said, yes, I'm into
guy?
Oh, okay. No. I thought you meant, like...
Before that, then this was the turning point. I was rooting for him. We were all rooting for him.
Yeah, I thought you meant, like, I saw this and I was still on...
Oh, like, no. He was one I had been previously rooting for.
Sure.
And then he just dug himself deeper and deeper into a hole. And Aaliyah left the show, which is interesting when we talk later about the litigations.
Okay.
I could keep going, but there's so many terrible people on the show. And it's actually not a crime to be awful and on TV. I mean, there was the guy who would only wear red, white, and blue flag apparel and told his fiance not to wear so much makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There was most recently Jeremy, who got busted by his Apple Watch for cheating on his fiance with the girl he was previously dating in the pod. Jeremy with an A.
Jeremy.
Yes. But again, we're not here to go over the best and worst moments in people in Love is Blind, though it's really fun to do. Please DM me if you want to chat further. We're here to talk about the crimes, the scandals, and the lawsuits. So in this show's six seasons, spanning barely 4 years, it was just 4 years in February of 2024 since the show has been on the air, there are currently three active lawsuits against Netflix and or its production and casting partners, Kinetic Content and Delirium TV. The first one came from a member of season two named Jeremy Hartwell. Now, if this name Jeremy, not to be confused with the Jeremy we just talked about, if he doesn't sound familiar, it's because we barely saw him on TV. He was mostly edited out of the show, which isn't unusual. Yeah. If a couple doesn't end up matching with somebody, if they don't make it to the altar, they're not going to be featured heavily. There's just not time for fluff. And sometimes even couples that do say yes and go on get erased from the show. Yeah. Maybe their stories aren't as compelling. No conflict, no drama. Who knows? But it's kind of the editor's discretion. So in July of 2022, Jeremy files a lawsuit over what he claims were, quote, inhumane working conditions, including reportedly being made to film drunk. Think about what that would mean if you were being forced to be filming drunk.
Forced to be drinking or forced to film
okay. while drunk, and being denied food and water and being paid less than minimum wage. So these are his allegations. And then there was the couple, Danielle and Nick, from that same season. Do you remember them? They actually did get married. Costume people, mm-hmm. Yes. They did get married. They have since divorced. They also were interviewed for this lawsuit, but they're not named in it. But there was sort of this expose about it.
Right.
And they were quoted in that. And they agree with Jeremy about the working conditions. They spoke out about their experience on the show, and they described filming as, quote, emotional warfare. Danielle in particular said she was having suicidal thoughts during the honeymoon in Mexico, and she was not given proper mental health support during or after filming. Apparently, cast members, when signing their contract with, I guess it's Kinetic, the production company, the contract states that they will face a $50,000 penalty for leaving the show without producer approval.
Right.
The contracts also reportedly included clauses requiring engaged couples to show up to their weddings, even if they didn't want to get married, as well as banning married couples from getting divorced before the final episode airs.
Okay. So, I get the first one. I don't get the second part.
No, that's very much an overreach, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you find out someone is... who knows what?
Yeah. Like,
you got to be able to get out of there. Mm-hmm. So the creator of Love is Blind, Chris Colleen, I'm not sure how to say his last name. He denies everything Danielle said and said that she never told producers about these suicidal thoughts and that she was free to leave at any time. The company's CEO said that Kinetic Content provides access to psychological care throughout filming. And this blew my mind, that there are two psychologists present in the control room during filming of the pods, listening the whole time.
And how are they not just sneaking little notes under the door to be like, AD,
run
girl.
Girl, run. Yeah. Also, yeah, how are they not pulling people off the show left and right?
I know.
Yeah. So they're also, cast members are also given a hotline for a specialist who's available 24/7. So if this is all true, then they really are kind of protecting their... the cast and themselves and covering their bases in advance, if true. The CEO also responded to the contract clause about the $50,000 penalty. He said, yes, it exists. We have never enforced it, and we've since removed it from all contracts moving forward. So I think they saw that and were like, this is a little much, and they were never going to do it. I think it was just a strong way of saying, we have a show to make. You got to show up for the wedding day. Like,
well, first season, everyone showed up. And then as we've gone on, less and less. This year, three people showed up.
I know. Well, we'll get to that. So I don't know the current state of the lawsuit, but my guess is that with the reality reckoning of it all, it might still be active as more of these allegations come forward. Jeremy's lawyer said that they brought this suit against Netflix against Netflix, Kinetic, and Delirium. I want to be very clear. There's three separate entities to serve as a, quote, proposed class action on behalf of all participants in Love is Blind and other non-scripted productions. So they're trying to like make this a big Bethany Frankel, come join the cause type of situation.
Is it the one hot dog boy? He was part of the reality reckoning.
Oh, was he?
He was interviewed or something. I think he was in that one big thing. Yeah, he was part of it.
Well, that makes sense. The two of them seem very unhappy with the experience.
Yeah.
Now, some people are critical of Jeremy's claims because most people know that alcohol is kind of the lifeblood of these shows and that, you know, I mean, it's not healthy, but I don't think there's forced drinking. I think there's ample alcohol available.
Mm-hmm.
It's available, and some people have better restraint than others, right? And we're seeing that conversation play out on Bravo with Leah and others. And there's also critique of Jeremy's lawsuit because of the discrepancy between what he's said publicly about his experience on the show directly after filming and what he's stating to be true in the lawsuit. So in Us Weekly, they reported that 10 days after season 2, Hartwell shared on Instagram what he described as an excerpt from a journal after returning from the Love is Blind pods. The diary entry describes the experience of the show as, quote, surreal and somewhat disconnected, as if I were caught in the current of a river that suddenly arose around me. Filming for Love is Blind was one of the most intense and memorable events of my life, and thanks to journaling and reflection, it remains an experience that I'm at peace with, regardless of the ups and downs. So that seems like someone who wasn't ranting about what a horrible time it was.
Right.
So some people are just like, is he just mad because he was cut out from the show and it didn't work out?
Mm-hmm.
Is this just kind of like bitter retaliation?
Right.
Does he want attention? We don't know. The second lawsuit, and we don't know where that is currently, but we'll certainly keep following it. The second lawsuit is from season 5 and it is way more serious. Lawsuit number 2 was filed by a woman named Tran Dang in October of 2023, and she was a female contestant in the show's 5th season, and we never saw her. Like, she was scrubbed so fiercely from the show. Of course, internet detectives have gone and have posted things that they think are her dress and, you right. know, a wisp of her hair in scenes, but for all intents and purposes, she's not on that season. She is alleging sexual assault, false imprisonment, and negligence. So Tran alleges that she was attacked by her then on-screen fiancé, Thomas Smith, who she's also naming as a co-defendant in the lawsuit. She hasn't spoken publicly. Her Instagram is private. So I found the document of the lawsuit. So I just pulled out a couple of the pertinent details of it to describe, you know, this is her description of what happened in the lawsuit.
Okay.
So on or around May 3rd, 2022, while Love is Blind was being filmed, Smith, who is the man, sexually assaulted plaintiff throughout the night. Amongst other acts, and certainly by no means is the forthcoming list exhausting, Smith forcibly and without plaintiff's consent groped plaintiff, exposed himself in the nude to the plaintiff without consent, forcibly and repeatedly made sexual contact with plaintiff without her consent, and over express objections. The suit goes on to say that production also swept it under the rug and made attempts to kind of mask the assault by characterizing it as a lack of attraction on Tran's part. They were like, you're just not into him. And it's feeling like, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, that's my eyes saying. Are it's like this because I'm like, wow,
they're like, yeah, they're just kind of like, stupid. Just you just don't, you're just not into him. So that's how maybe it's feeling. That's what she's alleging was their response. Tran decided to quit the show after multiple alleged attempts to notify producers about repeated alleged assaults, but she claims she was told she had to film a final scene with him in which she was fed lines by the producers just to get through it and to get what they needed. The plaintiff is seeking monetary relief in excess of $1 million due to the defendant's outrageous and grossly negligent conduct. So that's really serious.
Yeah.
And I can understand why they completely erased her from the story. I mean, this is really, really, really serious.
Really bad.
So
yeah.
I'm very curious how this one will play out. Kinetic and Delirium gave a joint statement where the companies first said they can't address undisclosed concerns, but that Tran never informed the producers of any wrongdoing of any kind, end quote. So they're just flat out denying it. And they also said that she never said she felt unsafe or experienced any of the allegations that she made in the suit. And they also went on to say, people can freely walk away anytime they want. We do not tell people what to say, what to do. We consistently tell people that this is their journey. This is their life. We're here to follow it. That was their statement. So like, if it happened and they're denying it, that bold face, like this is just so, so dark.
Yeah.
If it didn't happen, it's hard to imagine what the rationale for her to do this would be.
Right.
Because she's very much trying to remain anonymous. People have doxed her to an extent, but She hasn't made her Instagram public. She's not doing interviews. Yeah. It seems like she is traumatized and
wants to
prevent this from happening again.
And just the fact that she said, this is what I'm taking from it, or a little piece that makes me think, I don't know what Netflix is doing here, is that she says that they made her film a final scene. So if there's proof of this final scene,
I feel like that
would be something.
I'm glad you're saying that. The suit, I read a lot of the document and not the whole thing, but I'll put it in the show notes. It's actually pretty interesting if people want to read it. But she, you know, the lawyers are like, a lot of this happened on film. Like, obviously right. It wasn't ever going to be used, but what she's talking about, they're filmed 24/7 even. And then they went on to say they're not filmed 24/7, but there are cameras a lot of the time. Some of this is surely on film. I mean, her lawyers want them to produce it.
Yeah.
The chances of that existing, I mean, I know they could get in huge trouble for destroying something like that, but are they going to turn that over? I mean, don't they have to like go through discovery if this goes to trial? They're going to have to turn all that stuff over. So
right.
Ooh. This could be really, really bad for the show, for the franchise. And certainly is part of a bigger conversation happening in reality TV shows right now. And I know you and I have mixed feelings on the way Bethany's going about it, but in terms of sexual assault, there's been other cases, Below Deck.
Every season on
Love
Below Deck.
Island. Yeah, maybe Love Island. There
Bachelor
was like a hot tub.
Bachelor in Paradise.
Bachelor in Paradise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just absolutely unacceptable. So I do hope this sees a judge and there's justice.
Yeah, for sure.
So for the third and kind of fourth lawsuit, I'll explain. It centers around someone else from season 5 whose name is Renee Poche, which just has the loveliest little ring to it. So she was one of the rare cast members that paired up in the pod, said yes to a proposal. It was a guy named Carter Wall. They went on the honeymoon. She did the dress shopping. She went all the way to the altar, but we never saw her, or we barely saw her. Now, she did say no at the altar, and she's since spoken out, and we quickly learn why. Why she said no, that is. She did some press after the show, and by press I mean she interviewed on Out of the Pods podcast, which is hosted by Deep D and Natalie from season 2, which I listen to because I have problems. It's a great podcast. They're lovely. So she spoke very publicly and candidly about what happened to her on the show because people were like, what happened to Renee and Carter? Because they show up in Mexico or wherever it was they were vacationing.
Yeah. Their names are familiar to me, but I don't.
You would know them if you saw them. I'll post them. But they weren't really featured as a couple. We should have known, though, about Carter being a total red flag because he's the guy who on the vacation is talking about Red, White, and Blue Flag Boy, whose name I can't remember, said, that's the kind of guy I want my daughter to marry. He's like the real deal. So I was like, well, this guy sucks. I don't even know who he is because he hasn't been featured. But whoever this guy with the beard is, like, where'd he come from? And get him out of here.
Yeah.
So Gut was right about that one. So Renee watched the season back when it came out, just like everyone else, and she was surprised that she was almost entirely cut out of it. She said that production told her that they wouldn't be focusing on her storyline because of time constraints. They had to get the season from 12 episodes to 10, so some stories had to go. But she was like, I'm like not even in it at all.
Right.
And she'd gone so far, so she was very confused. So she pressed them more, and then she said production told her it was so she didn't have to relive the trauma of what she alleges happened during filming. Which kind of sounds like an admission to me, which is so complicated because then Netflix sues. So Renee's never done anything. She's never alleged anything against Netflix. She just went on and was like, this guy Carter turned out to be horrible. He wasn't who he said he was. And she talks about his toxicity and how disappointed she was at how it turned out. And also that it wasn't at all shown. I don't know why she wanted it shown, but maybe to show what she went through. I don't know. Maybe she just felt like it was like invalidating. I'm not sure.
And they show a lot of toxic stuff on the show.
They do. So you know it was bad.
Yeah.
But Netflix sues Renee for breach of contract for going on that podcast saying she violated the non-disclosure provisions of her contract by making public remarks and their arbitration requests $4 million from Renee. Going back to Jeremy's first lawsuit about, I don't know if I said this, but inhumane working conditions and making less than minimum wage. So castmates make about $1,000 a week for 8 weeks. So it's $8,000. And yes, if you do the math and work out like the hours they're working, it's $7. I don't think people are going on to replace their salaries in their jobs.
No.
Right?
No.
So, but also they're not getting paid much. So to ask someone for $4 million, now granted, Renee is very successful. She's a veterinarian in Texas.
Okay.
pretty sure she doesn't have $4 million, yeah. but... So Renee's lawsuit is actually in retaliation of that. So she didn't go after them. So I just think that's an important distinction. She's suing them for workplace violations, essentially so she can be released from the contract, which will then mean she's not responsible for paying the $4 million. Guess who her lawyer is?
I couldn't even begin to guess.
Mark Garagos.
Really?
He's like a big true crime guy. He's represented Chris Brown, Scott Peterson, Michael Jackson. But now... let's go more into the Bravo world. Scottie Pippen. And to bring it even closer, guess who's at the heart of Reality Reckoning?
Bethany?
Mark Garagos is Bethany's lawyer.
Wait, I think I did know that. Maybe. I don't know. Because I think it probably blew my mind if I did, in fact, remember that.
I know. I didn't know that. And I'm just, I was reading this all and I'm like, Mark Garagos. I'm like, that is like a legit lawyer. I mean... wild. So
I was going to guess Kathleen Zellner, so I'm really glad I kept my tracks up.
I mean, look, she's not just another high-profile criminal defense attorney. So she's seeking what is called judicial relief from this overreaching and unlawful talent agreement, which is the contract that they all sign. So like I did with the lawsuit for Trans case, I pulled out just kind of the overview to explain what she's alleging in hers. So hers reads, and I gotta say, her reads less like a legal document and more like a juicy, page-turning crime novel. Because I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. He's like, I don't know. It just reads like a true crime story.
Right.
When she joined the program, Poche was told that all participants would be extensively screened through a rigorous background check process, psychological examinations, and a compatibility assessment. Little did Poche know that she would be matched with a walking red flag. This is in the lawsuit.
Love it.
An individual named Carter Wall, who we'll now call Wall, who was unemployed with a negative balance in his bank account, homeless, violent, estranged from his family, and actively addicted to drugs and alcohol. Wall's erratic and alarming behavior and emotional instability became glaringly obvious to Poche and the production staff. Poche became utterly terrified to be around him and made her misgivings clear to production. Indeed, production had its own concerns about Wall, warning Poche to ensure he did not have access to firearms or other weapons. Nevertheless, Poche was forced to spend long stretches of time alone with him. Delirium, which is the casting company, made it clear she would be subject to legal action if she were to discontinue her participation in the program or otherwise refuse to move forward with the engagement. In this climate of fear and unease, Poche began to spiral physically, mentally, and emotionally. Once filming Rap, Poche ended her relationship with Wall. In the following months, she made limited public remarks about her horrifying experience on the program, in response to which Delirium is trying to drive her into bankruptcy. How, like, don't you want to watch that show?
Absolutely want to watch it. Like, let's green light it. Alrighty.
Yeah, it's send it through. But isn't that scary?
Okay, for production to say... maybe don't let him have any firearms.
Well, okay, so so I listened to her whole interview on Out of the Pods, and she actually carries.
Okay.
Like, so it was hers that she always has on her because she's from Texas and it's legal and whatever. Yeah. It's registered. It's all above board. So yes, they said that, but they were like, don't let him know you have that. And don't still, the sentiment still, remains.
No, I feel like they don't say that to anybody else.
It remains very alarming. Also, she alleges that a camera operator quit because of him because he was so aggressive and scary. Apparently he had an amphetamine addiction. So the drugs that he did take like ramped him up and he would be up all night. So she couldn't sleep. And he just lied. He lied during the pods that he was between jobs, had a home, all of this stuff, but he was actually estranged from his family, didn't have a house, hadn't had a job in forever, was living on that stipend they were giving him, and had nothing. Oh, she said she thinks that she didn't know, but she thinks they dined and dashed on their dates because she didn't pay, but he didn't either. So she thinks just sometimes might have like not paid their bills. It was all very traumatic. So with that in mind, do you think she wanted to see their story play out on the season to like have a witness maybe, or like have someone, or to see how they edited him and her? I guess maybe just the curiosity. I don't know, because I would be kind of relieved that it didn't come out, but maybe there's some like,
or she wants to save some other woman from him, like he went through this
that's
whole
true
thing,
that's
and there's
true
background and stuff expose him for that. But I mean, I can understand why Netflix doesn't want to show it, but
Of course,
but Man, and that's the crazy thing. Like, these background checks, okay, so they haven't been convicted of anything, right? That's, like, basically right. all a background check is. But they're not doing all these other – it feels like – first of all, let me go back. Mm-hmm. Let me back it up.
Back it up.
Knowing that Chelsea of Chelsea and Kwame is now one of the, like, looking for
– says all we need to know.
That's it. I don't need any more information. You don't take it seriously. I can tell you that much. You don't take it seriously. I need, like, major professionals on this and not okay. hot pink.
So for whoever doesn't know what Melissa just referenced, we learned on the season 6 reunion, which was just last week, even at the time of this recording. Yeah, last week. Chelsea from season, I don't know, 4 or 5?
Who knows?
Who married Kwame, who... Chelsea was a lot. She was very, I don't know, very Chelsea.
I think they gave her a nice edit.
They did give her a nice edit, but don't you know that she's difficult?
The most difficult. And the like most difficult. On all the time. Like it, so it exhausted on. Me.
She's actually perfect for casting. Anyway, she revealed at the sure. reunion. They brought people from past seasons
didn't
on the reunion.
Didn't make any sense.
It was so bizarre. But she's like, I work for Netflix now, and I am looking for brave, passionate, courageous singles all across the country who are looking to, like, make their leap into love or whatever she said. And you're like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. So, yeah, so all of this is really interesting, and the contracts are really getting scrutinized. I don't know. The internet's the internet. I don't know why they thought these would ever not be exposed, but now they're just literally verbatim in these lawsuits. People are... tweeting excerpts of them. They're really going to have to probably rework those a little bit.
Yeah.
Mark Garagos's partner, Mark Friedman, will end with this quote in a Vanity Fair article. I mean, Vanity Fair article about this
Vanity
stuff.
Fair.
Like, this is big. He says, these so-called reality TV contracts are in reality illegal. They're designed for an illegal purpose and are void as a matter of law. We have hundreds of clients who are ready to assert their claims.
The reality reckoning is coming. It is upon us.
That's the reality reckoning. And what I went on to read is that judges really look down at these contracts where big, giant corporate entities make lay people sign away their life, probably don't pay for a lawyer to review it with them, and strip them of most of their basic rights. Even if you sign a document like that, I think what he's saying in essence is this is not fair and the court is not going to look favorably on this.
Right.
So it's so hard because you and I have talked about this because there's so much about the Housewives shows we don't want messed with, right?
Right.
These women are of consenting age to be on this show and mm-hmm. they should decide if their mental health and pre-existing conditions can handle it or not.
Right.
But to kind of cry... abuse or whatever after, and I'm not talking about these situations, I'm right. talking about Leah McSweeney and others who after the fact, who after dedicating their book to Andy Cohen, their memoir, Leah McSweeney.
Did she?
Yes. Is now coming back and saying how horrible it was and they didn't let her go to her grandmother's funeral. You know, it's like some really big changes need to be made in reality TV around mm-hmm. assault and like treatment of people on set and
right.
validating people who are saying things are happening, or more transparency, or maybe 24/7 cameras so we can know if these things are going down.
Yeah.
But then some things are just like people are grown-ups. And if you sign up for something like this, you're signing up for a lot of that stuff that goes with it. Not right. the crimes,
obviously.
Not people mm-hmm. being violent, but a lot of the hoopla and the whatever. Hoopla, you know.
The hoopla and the whatever.
Pretty sure that was in the... legal.
I mean, Mark Garagos may have put it in there. We don't know. No, I totally agree with you. I think obviously there are things that have to be changed and
yeah,
there always is. And like reality TV hasn't been around forever. So there's still things that need to be changed. Maybe paying people more would probably be a good thing. Like, I don't know why I'm stuck on that, but like this can be on Netflix forever, your whole life, forever. And you made $8,000.
I agree with that, especially with Housewives when they play them on repeat. And I mean,
that's my comfort show. If I'm crying, I'm watching New York.
Can you imagine if they got royalties? They wouldn't have to like hawk vodka or whatever.
Ugh,
like,
yeah.
I will say, what if they paid them more? But also, what if they made the bar a little higher? I know we want to have fun and we want to have zany people. But mm-hmm. what if we could like... avoid the guy that we know is going to be a disaster, or the guy that we know was married and had a fiance at home while filming. How about that?
Going back to Chelsea, I heard that this past season, hope she was involved in this. They were DMing people on Instagram. So you're not finding people who want to get married. No. You're finding people now who want an Instagram following.
They want to be influencers.
Yeah. They're not applying. That's like all these kind of shows though, like Married at First Sight, the first couple seasons, it's more pure. Love is Blind, couple seasons is more pure. And then now we're just at the influencer stage.
I know. It's nothing wrong with influencer,
but like,
of course,
if you're going to get married, you need to be the one pursuing that and not have a Chelsea come to you and say, hey, hun, and start her whole thing.
It's so true. And that's the other fun thing is like on Out of the Pods with Deep D and Natalie, they interview a lot of people on the show and so many of them were approached by casting. I mean, not all of them. A lot of the women sign up. A lot of the men are hit up on Instagram DMs, local bars, the gym, the grocery store. They're just like out there vulturing like cult leaders trying to get people. And they get kind of the bottom of the barrel sometimes.
Yeah, you're not going to get people who are looking for marriage because they weren't looking for marriage. They were trying to build their pecs, I guess. I don't know.
Ugh, I know. It's so weird.
I think Love is Blind should be rebranded or rebooted. Get rid of Nick Lachey. Get rid of Vanessa.
Oh, please.
I mean, we could end it there, but I'll keep going. Yeah,
keep going.
I want average people. I want normal people. I want people
30 plus.
Who spent 30 plus. I say 35 plus.
I do too.
You're still doing good at 30.
Yeah, I do too. But I'm like, I'm in New York. I think my perception skewed. But yeah, give me 35 because that's when people get serious about being like, I should probably do this if I'm going to.
Absolutely. So average looking, no one's ever compared you to a celebrity, whether it's Megan Fox or anyone else.
Look, they can be cute. We don't want to look at a bunch of fuglies.
I want to look at a few fuglies. I got to be honest. I need that. I want to find pure love.
Like, I do too.
I want them to. I want them to find pure love.
Good distinction. Well, we look for pure love on Love on the Spectrum.
Yeah,
that's where we find pure love. I think, and nobody there is ugly, but I'm saying it's pure.
It is very pure. It's
pure because they are so honest.
So honest.
If they're not feeling it, they're not feeling it. No one's playing games there.
They couldn't if they tried. They would not be interested in it. Mm-mm.
Well, they can play video games.
That's the beauty of it. Yes. That's the beauty of it, though. Like,
that is the beauty of it. It's just sincere authenticity 100% of the time.
Love is Blind. You get people from Love on the Spectrum to coach the Love is Blind people to learn how to have a heart and to be nice and be honest. They can't be honest. So maybe they could teach them to be honest.
Don't you love when they talk about like why they love their boyfriend or girlfriend? And they're like, she is really pretty and smart.
Yeah.
She has a nice purse. And we also both like lions. And you're just like,
I know. That's all you need. That's all you need. I love it so much. I'll never get over it. And I was just talking about it today to somebody. It's just the most pure show on television.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Love is Blind, not so much. But thank you for indulging me for that hour. Absolutely. I couldn't believe there were 3 lawsuits already against the show.
I know. Actually, after hearing that, I can't believe there aren't more. It sounds like there is going to be a class action lawsuit. So
yeah, it sounds like it. So I don't know. I'm so curious about. Oh, and there's 2 other internet. You know how these shows always go international or start international. Yeah. It actually did start here, but now it's in Japan, Brazil, and Sweden. But anyway, that was fun. Thank you. Let's get out of Love is Blind and let's find out what you have been watching, because you said it was good and I want to know, and you're rah-rahing with your hands like cheer.
Rah-rahing. Yay. I think you'll like it. There's a chance you will get it as well. Wow. Because I think it's something people are watching. It's not one of my weird off
Melissa
20 years ago things. Okay. Here we go. Peacock. Annette Bening. Oh no.
I know. I mean, I know you know who she is. Yeah, go on.
What is Pretty Little Lies? What was that show? No. David E. Kelly, I think, is who it is. Fruit. Apples Never Fall is the show. I jumped into
it. I read that.
You read it? I don't know. Probably.
Wait, I gotta know.
Look it up.
Wait, is it about a family?
It's about a family where the mom goes missing. Yes. And her kids have to piece together everything they thought they knew about their parents. The parents are like tennis instructors or something in the whatever.
That was a great book. Is it based in Australia?
No, not. The book was. At least the book might be. But so I've decided to make it my treadmill show. So I will only watch it on the treadmill. Yeah. So there's 7 episodes. I'm only 3 in because I don't walk on the treadmill very often. And I'm loving it.
So excited. Wait, all the TV is coming up. I just want to make sure this was the book that I read. Yeah, it's by Leanne Moriarty.
And then did David E. Kelly, is he the one? Why am I saying Pretty Little Lies?
David E. Kelly is like 90210, isn't he?
No. Well, is he?
I mean, he's done a lot. I'm going to watch this. I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
Directed by Chris Sweeney, Don. It's based on the book. I don't see David E. Kelly. Producers.
This will be a show I think that you will really love. Annette Bening is amazing in it, of course.
She's great. I haven't seen her in something in a while. I read that probably like a year or a year and a half ago, maybe 2. Really good book.
Oh, good. Why am I thinking that this had to do with Pretty Little Lies? Maybe the lady who wrote the book wrote Pretty Little Lies. I don't know, but I thought there was a connection.
Yes, Leah Moriarty.
Okay, there it is. We got there.
Oh my
gosh,
this set dovetails into my clues.
Ooh.
Sorry, I just feel like we did that twice, so I got excited.
It's very exciting.
Thank you for that. I'm really going to maybe even start it tonight.
Rotten Tomatoes doesn't love it. It's got a 43%, but...
Look, I quote them in my episode, but they're not my holy grail.
No, they should be no one's. There is like a cheesy aspect to it and an overacting in some things. And it's just, I love it. I got to walk tonight.
Good. Good for you. I will lay in bed and watch it. I did Pilates at 8. So just putting that in there. Good. So people know.
You're good.
Okay. Prime.
Okay.
Hong Kong. Nicole Kidman. Because she was in Pretty Little Lies, right? Or Big Pretty Lies or whatever that show was.
I feel like we might be talking about different shows and one of us is not saying it right. And I think that's me. Which is the one with...
Pretty Little Liars. No. It was the one with the group of women. Like Zoe Nicole Kravitz, Kidman. Nicole Kidman. They were all beautiful. They were all rich.
David E. Kelly is
killed
definitely
a guy,
the producer.
Right? Spoiler alert.
I mean, I think so. No. I got to look this up. Sorry. Nicole Kidman.
Big Little Lies.
Why did I call it Pretty Little Liars? Because I don't even think that's
similar.
The real name of the show.
No, Pretty Little Liars is a show on like the CW or something.
It is. I didn't watch that.
I didn't either.
Even though that would be your thing. Okay. Big Little Lies. That was my connection.
Nicole Kidman. Okay. So my show is Prime, Hong Kong, Nicole Kidman.
I have no idea, actually. I don't know what she's doing unless it's a AMC commercial.
So the show is called The Expats, and my friend recommended it, and it took me a really long time to get into, but I ended up liking it. I'm going to read you the summary because I don't think I can describe it well. But then, okay, well, let me just read you the... Okay, no, it's not called The Expats. It's called Expats, and that's important because when you search it, you're going to find the other show. Set against the complex tapestry of Hong Kong residents, Expats depicts a multifaceted group of women after a single encounter sets off a chain of life-altering events that leaves everyone navigating the intricate balance between blame and accountability. Big Little Lies adjacent, right? Like, all these women, one event, it affects them all differently.
Mm-hmm.
It was really... interesting and like thought-provoking. It's like a missing child situation. Nicole Kidman's the mother, and then it affects all these interrelated women in a circle. And it's in like mid-2000s Hong Kong, so there was like a lot of political unrest. Very beautiful, very beautifully filmed, very well acted by everybody. But there was something about it. I was like, I finished it. Which, you know me, I'll jump ship. I'm not like you. But I wanted to know what happened. And then I was just left like conflicted. Like, I think I really liked that, but did I? Then I heard this review on NPR that like trashed it. And I'm very influenceable.
I can be easily convinced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, wow, I have no opinion of my own. But now I agree with everything those women said. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, it was, you know, too one-dimensional. They should have put more emphasis on the supporting character. I'm like, yeah. But I had none of those original thoughts. Mm-hmm. So it's flawed, I would say, but like perfectly watchable. And I liked the window into a time and place I didn't know a lot about. I thought it was really interesting. And there is a big suspense piece. And it's really sad. I'm kind of dark, but I like that. So yeah, that's what I watched.
It's kind of dark and sad, but I like that. So Okay, I actually want to check that out. I haven't kept up with Yeah, I haven't kept up with Nicole Kidman in a while. I saw something like You know what I saw her in? I saw her
the Hugh
recently.
Grant one.
Okay, yeah, that with the jackets, The Undoing. But no, I saw her like filming something and like a dog was attacking her in the street or something. Oh, in New York, wait, I'm sure.
You saw a picture.
I saw it on like, yeah.
I thought you like happened upon that. I'm like, that's crazy.
That's your life, not mine. I don't see anything. I would see like the beginnings of a true crime movie, but I wouldn't see anything else.
She's an interesting one. It's not unlike The Undoing in that it's deeply frustrating, but very watchable, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Does it have a satisfying ending, like too satisfying of an ending? Without spoiling it.
Okay. No.
Okay. The Undoing just irritated me because you were
God, the bridge.
We knew
the
what it was the entire
it was
time.
So bad.
And then the
no, not like that at all. It's definitely like
there's a plot.
There's a plot and a not like perfect resolution.
Okay. I can deal with that.
Yeah, I think you would like it. Anyway, tell me what we're gonna talk about for next episode. Clues, please.
Very excited.
We're back on our game.
Back on it. Okay. Three clues.
Okay.
Carpenter, TLC, and bus.
I am so excited.
Oh, good. I'm excited for you.
I think I know where this is going, and I think I'm really excited. This is so up my alley. I'm very excited.
It is. Well, I'm excited too. You're excited. I'm excited. We're excited. Can't wait to do this again.
Me too. Let's not let so many weeks go by next time. And so happy to be back. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can catch Melissa every Tuesday on her other podcast, Moms and Mysteries. You can also follow us on Instagram at Criminality Show.
And every once in a while on TikTok and more frequently on Instagram. TikTok has mostly become a Seeking Sister Wives like gateway
specific.
For me.
Just,
I go through obsessions and that's the current one.
Okay. That's fair. I'm just proud of you for opening the app, you know?
You know.
I just wait for to be a reel and call it a day.
I love it.
We'll see everybody in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Bye.